listening to Tech Talk Radio, proudly sponsored by D-Link, building networks for people.
I don't think anyone should think this is a license to continue to breach copyright. iiNet is not responsible for stopping it.
There's no real demand for censorship of the internet in Australia. There's no other country in the Western world, at least, that's trying anything like this.
Netflix aren't better at anything, but we think we've got something, and we call it the iPad.
And today, we're delighted to be present at the creation of digital radio in Australia.
Senator Conroy is completely botching the implementation of this filtering policy of his.
For adults who want to be able to watch the other material, we're not proposing to do that.
On air, on the internet, and on the pod, you're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Hello everybody and welcome to this week's edition of Tech Talk Radio. I'm Andrew McComb. Most zoos around the world have a vast range of animals, from the cute and cuddly to the dangerous and lethal. Would it surprise you that the zoo or menagerie of animals that Optus has been rolling out across our screens, magazines and online over the past however many years they've been playing in the Australian market has omitted some of its prize beasts? One in particular is the scorpion. A colleague who wanted to upgrade his handset looked at the option to break his $79 cap. He had a 12-month contract which had 9 months to run and was looking to recontract with a new handset, a scenario that many Australians would consider as their existing contracts near an end. Doing the maths and based on other contracts that telcos have been dishing up over the years, it was estimated that with 9 months to run, Optus would want something in the order of nine times $79, or $711. This was calculated on the minimum spend over the remaining duration of the contract. Time to call Optus to find out the payout fee. It was at this time that the American raccoon was caged and my colleague was introduced to the North American scorpion, Hottentotter. Hottentotter can kill a human in less than 10 minutes, so it has one hell of a sting in its tail. To his and everybody's amazement, the payout figure was not $711, it was a staggering $1,064. Now, a close inspection of the Optus webpage, where it spruiks its Yes Cap plans, reveals all the services and good things you get. It even states the total minimum cost for the 12-month contract, which is $948. At no point, even after expanding the terms and conditions, does it specify a payout or a formula for a payout, which I would think most consumers would want to know, if not have the right to know, before entering into such an agreement. And what is an initial termination fee? Confused? You're not alone. It's interesting to see that the TIO, which is the Telecommunications Industry Ombudsman here in Australia, has seen an almost doubling of complaints in the 12 months 2007-08 to 2007-09 across the four sectors of telecommunications: mobile premium, internet, mobile and landline. Their current report, which is available for download on their website, highlights a very worrying trend. There are several lessons to be learned here. Firstly, don't assume all the information you need is online. If something bothers you about an offer, or it seems too good to be true, then ring and ask the company concerned. Chances are, there is cause for concern. Secondly, there are always other options. Other companies, even prepaid options. If you have a desire for a new handset, buy it outright and put your existing SIM card into it. Go on a non-contract plan or even prepaid. Your cash flow may suffer short term, but you won't regret it. So for those who brazenly go feet first into contracts with companies like Optus, just beware of the scorpion breeding program. Chances are they have plenty of other critters in their zoo that you won't see in their ad campaigns either.
This week on Tech Talk Radio.
Senator Conroy is still selling up his internet filter. There's a buzz surrounding Google and it's a bit deja vu. Adam puts it up to the commercial networks over peer-to-peer downloads and the internet industry rejects Conroy's call for code. First up though, here's the latest from the Tech Talk News Desk with Dr. Ron.
This is Tech Talk News.
This week on Tech Talk News, a Queensland gamer agrees to pay $1.5 million in damages to Nintendo Facebook changes its user interface again, a UN proposal for low Earth orbit air traffic control, and new sensor technology might lead to smarter coffee mugs. Welcome to Tech Talk News. But first this week, Minister for Broadband Communications and the Digital Economy, Senator the Honourable Stephen Conroy, last week revealed that the federal government is in discussion with internet search giant Google in relation to censoring search results and YouTube content for Australian users. On the ABC's Hungry Beast program, Senator Conroy likened the government's recommendations to Google to that which was adopted by governments in China and Thailand, saying that refused classification content should and will be captured by the proposed net filter technology. Google, however, has said that it will not voluntarily comply with the government's request and warned that such a move would lead to the removal of many politically controversial but harmless YouTube clips. Google Australia's head of policy, Eala Flynn, said the company had a bias in favour of freedom of expression in everything it did, and that Senator Conroy's comparisons between Australia and China were not helpful or relevant. A Google Australia spokesperson said last week that the company would comply with relevant laws in the countries in which it operates. Whether or not Google's Australian search engine and YouTube are required to comply with Australian law, where their operation is undertaken in other countries, remains to be tested. Now to other news this week, a man from Queensland has agreed to pay games giant Nintendo $1.5 million in damages after he illegally distributed a new computer game online. 24-year-old James Burt purchased a copy of the new Super Mario Bros. 1 week before its official launch, then made the game available for download on the internet. Nintendo took action against Mr. Burt after noticing the game being available prior to its official launch and undertaking a special investigation. The managing director of Nintendo Australia, Rose Lappin, spoke to the ABC's PM program last week.
We're hoping that it will make people realise that we are really serious about following up on piracy issues. We've got a very conservative amount that were downloaded, and that's about 50,000 units, but that doesn't include anything that was copied from that, and it also was cut off because it was too hard to monitor.
Ms. Lappin said that the damage was done to Nintendo's intellectual property, so whether Mr. Burt made any money out of it or not is not relevant. Mr. Burt's father told the ABC that his son is a fanatic gamer who made a naive mistake that he'll now have to live with for a long time. Popular social networking site Facebook has again changed its user interface, much to the chagrin of many users. Facebook says the latest changes will better emphasise applications, games and search. The changes were being rolled out progressively from the start of last week, coincidentally Facebook's 6th birthday, so not all users may yet be seeing the changed interface. The new interface has been met with considerable opposition from users who say the changes are unwelcome and confusing. The changes come less than a year since Facebook's last major overhaul in March 2009. About 400 million people worldwide use the Facebook social network. A proposal to be discussed at a UN committee this week will examine the feasibility of an international air traffic control system for outer space. The system would be designed to prevent damage to satellites and spacecraft from orbiting debris. Most pieces of debris are travelling at more than 25,000 kilometres an hour, and at such a speed, a fleck of paint could do as much damage as a .22 caliber rifle bullet. The UK Telegraph said that UN officials are now proposing an international space traffic management system that will track and control the movements of spacecraft to ensure there are no accidents, much like air traffic control centres do with aircraft. Currently, the United States is the only country with the ability to track satellites and debris in space. And for IT boffins the world over, have you ever wondered where in the office you left your coffee mug? Well, from the people that bought you 802.11 wireless networking, a research team at the CSIRO has announced that it's working on tiny location sensors, which can be attached to just about anything. CSIRO research engineer Phil Valencia spoke on ABC Radio last week.
We've developed interfaces for various sensors such as humidity and temperature, accelerometers for sort of tracking motion and things like that, as well as other little things for controlling power outlets and stuff like that. So it really just depends on what the object is that you're interested in, and then you want to pick sensors that make sense for that particular object.
Mr. Valencia said the sensors could be used for a wide range of applications, like monitoring when a stapler might need to be refilled, or even making recommendations on food hygiene if a perishable item is past its use-by date or has undergone a number of significant temperature variations. Mr. Valencia said that the CSIRO was still working on powering the devices more efficiently and also working on ways to reduce their current size. I'm Dr. Ron, and that's your tech update for this week.
Previously on Tech Talk Radio.
See, we're a bit rusty, everybody. It's been 8 weeks since we've been on the wireless and...
There we go. You need to press buttons, Andrew. Have you forgotten?
Yeah, I have, Lid.
The iPad, look, it looks great. And I was saying to Adam, I really want to get one for work.
Oh, boy, was he wrong.
Tell everybody your secret.
Well, no, but you're not going to make me admit to that.
Has he been unfaithful, Doctor?
Well, the thing is that...
Am I sure I want to do this? No!
Oh, well, I think they got in a legal thing. You know what Apple's like. Lawyers at 20 paces all the time.
Blind Freddy could see that. Everybody except AFAC could see that.
A good mix of tech news and music.
Yeah. Windows Mobile is the pig and everyone comes up with their own lipstick, right?
Go to a webpage and you get sound at full volume at 2 in the morning and wake everybody in the house up.
Entertaining, informative and independent. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio. Panel on Tech Talk Radio.
Oh, must be that time of the night. Hello, everybody. Tech Talk Radio is back for show two, or episode seven, if you're counting, for 2010. And they said it'd never last 5 years, and we're all still here. I wonder what that means. Dr. Ron, good evening.
Good evening. How are you going, Andrew?
Yeah, good, thanks. What's news?
What's news? It's been a busy week.
Have you got a coffee cup yet with a little implant in it so you always know where your coffee cup... How's it going in the dishwasher?
Hopefully it would tell you that your cup was in the dishwasher, but they're going to have to address all those sorts of issues, aren't they?
Does it also shut down when it detects it's in the dishwasher?
Yeah, potentially. Yeah, the crazy guys at the CSIRO, they've done a good job, haven't they?
What on earth do you need?
Are you guys talking about?
You weren't listening to the news, were you? I can tell.
Sorry. The CSIRO are developing little sensors that are really, really tiny and you can attach them to anything.
Oh, okay.
And you can use them to tell you where something is.
I saw that episode of Spooks.
Did you? They're EPIRBs of a domestic variety.
That's right. Or if something needs to be refilled, like a stapler or something else, or a drink fountain.
Yeah.
You pop them around the office.
Or a bottle of bourbon.
We've
decided the coffee cup is the most important
thing. What about
the
car keys?
Yeah, well, that would be a great one.
Wherever you can't refill your car keys. That's silly.
No, but you could find them.
Find them if you
lost
them. Don't
you whistle to find your car keys?
Well, yeah, they used to have those things, didn't they? Used to go off at 3 in the morning when the cats would go meow or something like that. They've
gone a bit
out
of fashion, those things, now.
Have they? Ah, well, maybe they'll be back in vogue thanks to the CSIRO, the makers of 802.11, whatever it was, and all that sort of good things. You know, you never know your luck in a big city. Anyway.
From the people that brought you Wi-Fi.
Graham, you've introduced yourself. How was your week this week? Anything exciting?
Oh, a very busy week at work with implementing a new site of, Small Business Server 2008 and about 22 new workstations and rolling it all out. And
excellent.
This weekend we cut over to the new servers and all the new workstations. So I've been...
Excellent.
Yeah.
That would have kept a lot of people very busy for a long time, I would have thought.
kept a few of us busy basically from 9 in the morning till 10 at night. On the Saturday.
Did you hit any problems? Like anything that was like, uh-oh, or was it
no,
all just...
No big uh-oh moments. We got through the whole lot without one of those.
See, it's good these days, isn't
it? And I actually got Sunday off.
Oh, gee, it went that well, did it?
It went that well that I didn't.
Now, is this the machine that you've taken home to play with over the past couple of weeks?
No, it's the same operating system I've been playing with on that machine.
So you got Sunday off in lieu of all the other weekends you've spent tinkering on it. Is that right?
Well... Yeah, don't mention the war.
Okay.
And by the way, if you're running release candidate 2 of Windows 7, it'll be annoying the goodness me's out of you at the moment because it'll restart every half hour, I think. Have you experienced any of those?
No.
Have you upgraded? Says he looking at Graham, who was running RC2.
I'm running Windows 7, RTM
ready
through
to market.
My Microsoft Action Pack.
Excellent. So for all those people that are still running that release candidate 2, time to upgrade. I guess that's
go
what
and get a real
is.
Version. Windows 7 is worth it. It's a good operating system.
And JD, how's your week?
It was good.
Got your iPad yet? No, because no one else has. You going to get one?
Well, I will, but probably not straight away. I'll probably wait to see if they overheat or they do something weird because it's a first release product. I'll wait for the second one.
Overheat. Yeah, well, yeah, you never know. Yeah,
batteries exploding, all those sorts of things. These things happen, yeah.
Yeah, and the MIDI keyboard still going all well at your family? Because that was your Christmas acquisition, wasn't it?
Well, amongst others, yeah, absolutely. And the rumour file's gone off the iPad now because, of course, it's out. Well,
more or less out. So the rumour now is around the next MacBook Pro with an i7 multi-core processor.
Oh, yeah.
Allegedly appearing on the network around the place.
Oh, very good.
And liquid cooling for the next iMac.
Well, that sounds dangerous. Drop last your iMac and you have a flood.
Well, last time I tried liquid cooling in a Macintosh product, it leaked all over the place all the time.
Does that mean you have to get a plumber in to install your computer?
To fix it, absolutely.
What liquid do they use for the cooling?
I don't know. I presume it's something like what you use in the radiator of your car.
Some sort of
glycol or something similar.
Oh, some sort of coolant.
Oh, well. It'll be good. Well, when's it scheduled?
It's a complete rumor. But,
oh, is it? Yeah, oh, good. Let's foster these rumors because I think that's how things go these days, especially in the tech world.
Based on a patent that Apple put in 2006, but they're also saying with the new Intel architectures coming out, they can't keep putting laptop-scale processors in their iMacs and expecting people to buy them at top dollar. So they're thinking they're going to have to put the enterprise-class chips in, which take cooling.
Mm-hmm. And, okay, of course, they're resistant to the... In a PC, you cool it by just whacking a bloody great fan on top of it. And you don't want to do that in your iMac just because it's noisy and...
Yeah, well, Jobso doesn't like fans.
That's what I mean.
Okay, so we cool it with dihydrogen monoxide or something.
Yeah, that's right.
Yep.
Laptops are great. They keep your knees warm in the wintertime, as we've heard on that promo on numerous occasions. But they're a bit... they get a bit sticky in summertime. You want to have it on like one of those little stable table things if you've got your laptop. Otherwise, your knees get very warm. But that's another story for another time and another show.
Don't use it on a soft surface because you'll block up the cooling holes and it won't. Yeah, it'll
that's good. Not the doona.
Set fire to your knees. Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly.
I like the market now because my wife's got one of these. She bought a USB powered fan and managed to get a laptop cooling device for free.
Hang on, a USB power? Yeah.
Yeah, it's a little fan that waves at her. It looks like a flower. It looks very cool. But she got a USB-powered laptop cooler, which is a little stand with fans on it that blow on the bottom of the laptop.
Blows air up through the bottom of, through all the cooling entries in the laptop.
And the good thing for the girls is it'll do your hair at the same time.
Probably.
Because it picks up the warm air from the processor and across the head. So
if you can just harness it in a nice little sort of bag.
Think of how environmentally friendly that USB fan is. I have to get one for mine for, Valentine's Day. That was yesterday. Oh, she'll have to wait another 12 months. Unless you live in the United States. Hello, Lydia. We're going to be hearing from her later this evening,
too. It's always yesterday in America, so yes, happy Valentine's Day.
They never quite catch up, do they?
Is that a philosophy?
Happy less than 3 day, as I saw reported somewhere. Think about it.
Who else have we got joining us tonight, Andrew?
On Fader One, I'd like to introduce a long-time listener to Tech Talk Radio.
Long-time listener, first-time caller.
First-time caller, yeah. Now, we don't give out our Skype phone number that generously, and tonight is no exception. So one of our regulars on the chat, and you can come into our chat if you'd like at chat.techtalkradio.com.au. It's a growing group of users there at the moment. I'd like to welcome from up north, and he can tell us where he is and all that sort of stuff, is the alias person known as Warlock, otherwise known as Jason. Hello, Warlock, are you there?
Yeah, how's it going, guys?
Oh, look, it works. Don't do delays like that. That's a shocking thing to do on radio. Welcome to Tech Talk Radio. Now, you've been a long-time listener to the show. You even ran into that Adam Turner bloke. I think he accosted you.
The scruffy fella.
Yeah, the scruffy fella accosted you.
All right. He seems a nice guy.
Found you at Darling Harbour one day, so we thought we'd get you in on the show one night live. So here you are. So tell us a little bit about us. You've been listening to us for a while. What do you do? What's the Warlock story, and how did you get the alias Warlock?
Well, I actually made up the alias Warlock years ago, even before the internet, when people used to pass around discs and stuff, and I thought it'd be really cool and come up with a name there, but... Warlock is pretty much a common thing, so I thought everybody would have that. So I sort of threw in a bit of a hacksaw-type twist in the weird spelling, Warlock, and just been using that for years because it doesn't clash with anybody and nobody else is weird enough to spell things like that.
On the on Go, I think, Channel 9's Go channel, there's Bewitched. Wasn't there a wizard or something called Warlock? On that, no.
Well, in the Bewitched...
Yeah, Warlocks on them, but not exactly spelt the same kind of way.
No, because that's what I thought of when I first saw your alias. I thought of Bewitched, but
in,
not...
In the Bewitched universe, Warlocks are male witches.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah.
It's too much time watching to you.
Years ago, I actually was out driving in the work van, and I went past a sign that said Wizard Homes, and it sort of went from Wizard to Warlock, and then that's where I came up with it.
Oh, very good. All right, well, without giving away advertising time, what do you do, Warlock, in plain speak, no ABC style?
Yeah, not a problem. I just basically at the moment doing desktop support for computers for a outsourcing company. We sit in clients' offices and fix the staff computers whenever something goes wrong there and keep them going. In the past, I've done Unix administrator work for up to 30 servers for telco, and I've done a bit of programming with Perl and PHP, that sort of thing. So
okay.
I sort of dip my fingers in all sorts of areas to do with computers, but if you ask my mum, she'd say I was born with a keyboard in my hand, basically, eat, drink and sleep computers all day and night.
I think I think a lot of us are guilty to that charge in this studio familiar, at the moment. But anyway, and where are you? Which part of this wonderful sunburnt country are you in?
Oh, I would be in God's Own. That's also known as Western Sydney.
Western Sydney. Ah, it's a nice part of the world, isn't it? Western Sydney? How west?
It is, yeah. They're very quiet and calm out here, not too busy like right in the city. Most of the time when I've lived in Sydney, probably for over about 12 years, I've lived mostly around the Midwest, but this time I've moved way out west and quite actually enjoying it out here.
Way out west. Penrith, isn't it? That's where it goes up into the hills to the Blue Mountains or something. I remember that. It's a long, straight stretch of road that heads out that way.
Not far from Penrith, a little bit closer to the city than that.
Hey, you'd come across a few good tech pranks in your time too, based on the amount of work that, well, the type of work that you do, wouldn't you?
Definitely. We had one with a friend of mine that worked just before Christmas where one of the guys was away on holiday, so we sticky taped all of his telephone and keyboard and mouse and everything to the table. And
That's harsh.
Wasn't too happy when he got back.
Gee, you know where your friends are.
So he couldn't move his keyboard. At least you didn't screw it to the table with a self-tapper or something. That would have been diabolical.
Yeah, well, I remember way back in the old days, way back, nobody should actually do it at home, but they had, with the really, really old monitors that first came out, you could swap a couple of cables over inside and it would flip the image upside down and people didn't know what the heck was going on there.
Yeah,
you can't do that, of course, these days, or it might go boom.
Yeah, I guess that'd do it. But you could probably do it in software. You could turn a screen upside down quite easily, I would have thought. But, Dr. Ron, did you...
We actually have that happening. Accidentally, people drop their keyboard on the floor at the company that I'm currently supporting, and the screen suddenly flips upside down. I thought they were joking at first.
How does that work?
It actually turns out you can press, I think it's Control, Alt, and Up arrow, and it flips the screen upside down.
Well, there's something you can do next time you're at work. Try that. What was that? Control, Alt, and Up, was it?
Yeah, it was on certain Lenovo machines.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, if you check in your,
I've never heard of it before.
If you check in your monitors and displays control panel, you'll find that there's a way of rotating the screen around, and that's for people that have got big plasma screens that they want to use for advertising. So they put them on their side so that they'll look like a big A4 picture, but you've got to turn your screen on its side.
And
so
is there a shortcut for that? Is there? Obviously, there is.
Obviously, Wallach's found it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, that's right. It drove me crazy trying to figure out how to undo it, and they were very grateful when we do because they thought something had gone weird as well, like they had a virus or something, but it wasn't anything like that.
Did you charge them lots and lots of money, Wallach, to fix that problem?
I wish I could. Unfortunately, I'm working for somebody else and I just get the money that they give me.
I imagine it'd be a good feature for people with projectors as well, because often if you hang your projector upside down from the ceiling, you want to flip the image as well.
I hate the way projectors actually rearrange your desktop for you whenever you plug them into a laptop, or is that just me?
No, it happens to me a lot.
I just think, oh no, not another presentation. I'll spend half an hour rearranging my desktop when it's finished. Actually, there's something else. If you're a Windows 7 user, Graham, you might also know this. Sometimes when it does an upgrade, you know when you get those 3 a.m. updates, the service patches and all those things that come through?
Yeah.
I lose all the desktop icons on my screen. I have to go and turn them back on again.
I've noticed that. You right-click the desktop and you go view and you say show desktop icons.
But why does it do that? It's very frustrating because if you're not used to it, if there's somebody out there and you probably go, where do all my desktop icons on my desktop keep going?
They've been deleted. I'll have to find them again.
They disappear.
I'm just very confused at the moment because as I was doing it, I was doing it on my screen here to demonstrate, and I've gone to view and the menu's come up and show desktop icons is not ticked, and I've got a screen full of desktop icons.
You can confirm that, can't you?
That's a bit odd.
That's confusing.
Does it refer to system desktop items, does it, in Windows 7?
Oh, now they've gone.
Now your whole desktop's gone blank. Wow, that's a bit trippy.
Sounds a bit like trying to use the group policy on Windows whenever they have something like they'll have an option in there. It'll be something like disable run key, and you have to hit enable to disable and disable to disable the disabler. Well,
yeah, that's right, because you're enabling the policy that disables the key, yes.
That's getting awfully technical. I think we should draw a line at talking about group policies on this radio program. I think that's getting a bit out of...
I spent half of Saturday playing with them.
You guys can go and have your own show on another radio station, right, if you're going to start talking group policies. But anyway,
we had some good tech pranks emailed into us during the week, Andrew, because you asked for people to do
stuff. I do want some tech pranks, and it's actually doing very well on Google. If you do tech prank searches on Google, we come up pretty well up the top at the moment, which is just terrific. So send them through. Ooh, Dr. Yeah, Roy, so you've got one?
I've got a few here. Andrew, no relation, I take it, says, I used WinVNC to take remote control of another staff member's computer while they were on it. Each time they typed something into the word processor they were using, I would delete or replace letters. When they moved the cursor back to retype the letter, I would move the mouse cursor away. I managed to keep this up for about 10 minutes until I keeled over with laughter. Andrew, that's a bit harsh. Jono says, g'day gang. G'day, Jono. I was working at a high school in West New South Wales. We had Macs and remote admin installed. This was a great program because not only could you control the other computer, but you could also turn on the microphone and listen to them as well as talk to the people on the other computer. This is bit sinister, isn't it?
So it's like VNC, but yes, from Macintosh, but, yeah.
Hang on, what's VNC? What does that acronym stand for?
Virtual Network Client. Computing. Console?
Yeah. Virtual Network Computing.
Sorry, there's just people out there going, what's VNC?
What it is, it's a way of remote controlling a computer. So you remote to another computer over the network what's on the screen and the ability to move the mouse and the ability to type on the keyboard.
It's a help desk facility, really.
What it's very frequently used for, or else to use your computer when you're traveling. So you might install VNC on your computer and be able to remote into
it. Yeah, we use something similar at the company that I support. A couple of months ago, I connected somebody. I phoned up and said I was going to install Adobe Flash for them and said, okay, I'm about to do that right now, and did the install and said, okay, it's finished. And they're like, wow, that was quick. I didn't even actually see anything come up on my screen. And I was like, oh, I accidentally connected somebody else's computer. They probably won't know what's happening.
Oops.
The cursor started moving and it installed Adobe Flash for them out of the blue.
See, this is all these good gadgets. Anyway, Dr. Ron, now we've established what VNC is. Tell me what was going on up there in New South Wales.
Well, Jono says he put this application to good use. An unsuspecting student would be working away. Then all of a sudden, a little voice would say,
this is Big Brother.
Yes. Very close. Help, help, I am stuck in the computer and I can't get out. Well, you can imagine the look on the student's face, says Jono.
Which he was watching because he'd turned on the webcam.
On the webcam, yeah. One student got such a shock, she jumped up and would not go back near a computer until I'd shown her that it was indeed me who had done it. Well, it did not take long for the word to get around. Other students, so my fun was short-lived. That's a good one, Jono. And we also had another Andy who said, hi guys, my favourite is using the autocorrect feature in Microsoft Word. There's a person at my work who isn't very good with technology. Whenever he types up a notice, it's usually done with one finger and he doesn't look at the screen. It's also usually printed without being read. One day I set up Microsoft Word so that any time he typed the word the, it changed it to the
something
F
rude.
--dashing censored, but I used the full version. As such, a number of notices went up around with the auto-corrected versions of the the in place. I have not.
Oh,
been
I see. So he had an adjective to the end of the.
He would type up a sign that says, "Please close the door," and
yeah, thank you.
And what he printed out would say, "Please close the flaming door."
Door. Yeah. I haven't been allowed near his computer since.
Excellent.
Keep sending him through, guys. Very good.
We're not really going down a macabre sort of manner. We're just really curious because it happened in our office the other day that some pranks started going on. So I thought, what a good way. Let's find out what the best pranks are around at the moment. They're all coming through. So visit the Tech Talk Radio page and just send them through. We'll read them out on the air. One other thing that we're doing in the office at the moment is if you get in to Windows and one of your colleagues and you share their C drive while they're not watching,
uh-oh,
what you can do is you can play with the notification sounds in their Windows folder, you know, the bing-bongs when you get new mail and all that sort of stuff.
Ding.wav.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Ding, wav, and all that sort of stuff. And you can change them around, and boy, that's a lot of fun in the office. It can be very embarrassing. It's not unlike that guy on Channel 7 the other day when that man emailed him. Well, that's my speculation anyway.
Yes, the pictures.
There was a timely
at, yes.
email that hit that poor old Macquarie banker's desktop.
Can I do a rant at this point? Just because you've mentioned something that reminded me of this.
Yeah, we haven't got the first part of the rundown yet, but go right ahead.
Okay,
system
quick
noises, by any chance? No.
Yeah, system noises on radio.
It's like a car horn when you're driving and they use them on the radio. Is that what you're alluding to?
Except that, yeah, while you're listening to a radio station and the radio station has a computer plugged in that's going with the sound of which is going to air, and you can hear them, you know, they open up their web browser and you get ding, which is the company's warning, you are using the company internet, you are required to abide by the standards. You click OK on that, and then you hear as they click around the web pages.
Okay. What do they do?
Going to air. I presume it's a mistake. I presume that
whoever... Which prestigious radio station was this?
Should I name and shame?
I think you should.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. ABC News Radio.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, dear.
See, they're so computerised, they don't know what goes on in
that
place.
That's right. Yeah, and they've got a computer that I think... And it often happens when the show... Where the program that's going out to air is one of their external programs from an overseas provider.
Yep.
So presumably the studio announcer is sitting there preparing for the next session, or he might be doing some research on a story or reading through the ABC News website or something like that.
Very good.
And that's when you notice it quite a lot.
Okay, that's good.
So...
We need to educate them about
to mute. Those listening in the ABC control room.
Disable your system sounds.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've got a very funny, quick tech prank. When I worked as a...
good luck, Andrew.
I haven't even...
Sorry, I was trying to get to an item on the rundown.
I haven't even got an item on the rundown here. We haven't got a rundown to look at, so...
No, we don't. So we're just making up as we go along.
Yeah.
I've put the hand up. There you go.
Now we have rundowns we can ignore. Thanks, Andrew.
When I worked as a telephone technician, we used to be able to do a great deal from a maintenance terminal. And from one room to the next, you could actually type in, I want to make that telephone go off hook on hands-free and dial a number. And you'd hit enter. And suddenly, your phone would be like as if you'd pressed a button and you start dialing a number and it rings in the other room and the person answers and goes, what? And you go, what? Why is there someone saying what coming out of my phone? You go, what? And the other person says, who's this? Who's this? You rang me. No, I didn't. You rang me. No, I didn't. Bye. Okay, bye. And hang up and then do it again.
Is that Dr. Ron's blind date service?
It was. Very juvenile, but yes.
Just wait until you ring the CEO and try it on that one. Who was that?
Yeah, I did that. Okay, what are we looking
at? And that's why you don't work there anymore.
That's why I don't work for that company anymore. best we jump to the rundown, Andrew.
We won't tell you who he works for now. To the rundowns. Scammers are targeting lonely lovebirds. We had Valentine's Day yesterday, and of course the realm of nasty things that are doing the rounds have been warnings out from all those particular organisations. If you're listening to this now, it's probably way too late, but maybe you got done by one of those little scammy things. But people looking for love on Valentine's Day being warned to be vigilant after a reported 30% increase in online dating romance scams. So just be careful of those emails that promise everything and deliver nothing. And I'm getting a lot of Russian emails at the moment. I don't know whether you guys have had that in your inbox
lately. I did.
Lately.
They've tailed off now, but they have a heap of them. Yeah,
someone from Russia said that I was talking to you on that chat. In fact, there's been a lot of interesting spam of late. They've gone back to no messages and JPEGs again too, I've noticed, for certain pharmaceutical usage.
Well, I've seen a lot of the ones like you're talking about and ones that say, is this article about you, and a web link to something.
Oh, I haven't seen that.
Yep.
So, only click them if you know who they're coming from.
That would suck you in, wouldn't it?
That would suck you in. That's the intention, yeah. So
I've had a lot of people signing up to my blog recently in the last few weeks with email addresses with a .ru extension.
Have you?
A lot more than usual, yeah.
Yeah, and they've been selling things?
They've tried to, but I vet all of the comments.
Oh, very good.
Approve all the comments.
So why doesn't Conroy just block all of access?
Oh, don't start us on Conroy just yet.
Yeah. Well, anyone coming from a .au address just gets blocked from entering the country.
Well, he's going to play it safe. He's going to block just anything that doesn't come from Australia. That's all we'll see.
Can we talk about this after the break?
Okay.
Because we're going to hold part of the rundown if you read it down the back there. So anyway, the ACCC has issued a warning to the nation's romantics to be wary with more than 550 consumer complaints already for scams in 2000. So I guess it's just preying on people's weaknesses, I guess, isn't it? Whether it be, like you were just saying there before, Graham, about is this about you type sort of scenarios where they appeal to people's curiosity, really, isn't it?
That's exactly what it is, yeah.
All right.
And besides that, they'll also chat up people on the romance sites and get to know them really well and then ask for like $10,000 for their sister's foot operation or something like that, and a lot of people send them the money.
Yeah, we talked about scams like that a while back. There were a lot of lonely older people in Queensland in particular put out, the Queensland Police or someone like that put out a warning about that a while back.
Yeah, I've also seen the police and lawyers who are sending $50,000 over to Nigeria themselves and getting scammed.
So yeah,
that'd be
everybody's Vulnerable.
That's exactly right.
Now, there was another,
anybody can be tricked by these things.
There was another interesting thing that's arising around, I think in, I'm not sure which country it is. Lydia Davis, our US correspondent, drew my attention to it during the course of the week. It's a webcam system, and I can't remember the exact name of it at the moment. I'll get it for you in a sec. I'm just afraid if I tab away from my applications, things will happen on my desktop. But, it's basically where you connect, like, through a Skype client to a server, and it randomly connects you to anyone else in the world. It's called, like, webcam roulette or chat roulette or something like that. Mm-hmm. And it's becoming a real worry in the United States at the moment. I don't think it's got on here, but just the ability of going, push the button, and who am I going to talk to? Who am I going to see on my webcam? You just don't know. So one of these new little webby things or websites that are coming up, which parents need to be very, very much aware of, especially if the kids find it. So anyway, let's talk a bit about Google because we're running out of time already. Google launched Buzz. Anyone played with Buzz yet? What's it like? Anyone had anything to do?
Yeah, I had a bit of a go of Buzz. It also comes up on my iPhone if you go to the Google page there in a mobile web view, and you can chat to other people. It's sort of integrated Google Wave with Gmail, so you can have inline conversations with as many people as you like, put in integrated attachments and videos and all that sort of thing, see people typing live exactly the same as Google Wave.
So it really is a social networking plug-in to Gmail to try and bolster Gmail, because Gmail's done, it hasn't evolved any way, shape or form really in the last, or however long I can remember.
Well, it has in small ways. Gmail's a fantastic service. I don't see
great
why.
Great for storing things.
Oh, just great as an email service.
And it's out of beta.
Finally. Only took 10 years. Social networking module. It sits on top of Gmail and allows users the webmail program to share photos, links and videos with other Gmail users. Buzz will communicate with Flickr and Twitter, as well as Google properties such as YouTube and Picasa, but it is incompatible for now with Dr. Ron's favourite, Facebook.
Facebook. Facebook. Facebook. Google Buzz came under some... Shortly after it was launched, came under some criticism a couple of days ago. There were a lot of privacy complaints. People were either misunderstanding or misconfiguring their Buzz settings, and people were having their Gmail contacts, which they thought were private,
publicized,
being displayed as public contacts. So Google has had to do a bit of a quick change as to how people set up their Buzz account. So I don't know that they actually had an account as such previously. It was just an interface that you access through Gmail. But I think now you actually have to create an independent Buzz profile so you specify if your Gmail contacts are public or if they're private or whatever. I haven't played with it yet, but it's something that I'll be doing in the next short while.
And that's a good warning not to be click-happy when you're setting these things up. Actually read when you answer yes, no, actually understand what you're answering.
Yeah,
but particularly...
Yeah, basically when you started using Buzz... It'd create a public profile, and automatically everybody who was a contact in your address book would be, quote, auto-following you, similar to in Twitter.
But did it ask you if you wanted that? Did it ask you if you wanted that to happen, or did it just do it without asking?
No, it just automatically did it. As soon as I joined on there, it says these 12 people from your list are now following you, and you could see anybody else who's following. But it automatically also created your public profile. So if your name was... If your email address was like bwilson@gmail.com, you had a public profile called B. Wilson, which meant that everybody knew your email address so you could get scammed or people talking to you or spam or anything like that straight away. So it was very insecure, but they put all these privacy measures now to try and fix up that before it escapes, which means it's a lot faster than Facebook, who wait till, you know, 2 or 3 months before they add privacy to anything and they get a lot of trouble.
And that is one of the interesting things about cloud computing, that if you've already got all of your private information in Gmail or Facebook or one of the other systems, and they decide to tweak the system at the other end in the cloud, then suddenly all of your data can become public. Or like this, you might have it privately set up, but you've added in a new feature and you're not experienced with it, because no one really knows much about Buzz at the moment. We're all still learning. And you can inadvertently release all of your private information. Whereas if it was something on your computer that you had control of, it's very easy. You just don't connect to the internet until you've got the thing working properly.
Very true.
One of the pitfalls of cloud computing that people are still finding out about.
Would it surprise you that Google has received almost 9 million posts and comments about Buzz and is receiving 200 posts per minute from mobile phones alone? So it's obviously out there. People are giving it a go. I wonder if it's going to be the new wave, because what's happened to Google Wave? I think it made a promo and that was it.
Wave's going to go away, and it's just going to be this new Google Buzz, I think, which is...
It sounds like they've included a lot of the same technology. So
yeah, and it's also nothing like Yahoo Buzz. Everybody likes to stick with the same old tried-and-true words, I guess.
Well, we're all creatures
Yahoo
of habit.
Buzz is about news.
We're all creatures of habit when it comes to this sort of tech, because once you're in the rut of using one particular program, why change unless you... Unless there's good reason to, or your friends change, really, isn't it?
A Google spokesperson said it's still early. We have a long list of improvements on the way. We look forward to hearing more suggestions and will continue to improve the Buzz experience with user transparency and control and weasel words top of mind. Oh, that's good. So they're still working on it, still under development, and yeah,
very
good
one
to watch.
All right, let's talk about Mr. Stephen Conroy, the Right Honourable. Is that what you call a senator?
Is Senator the Honourable Stephen Conroy?
So he's not Right Honourable.
No, he's not. He's just Senator the
Honourable. A lot of people have called him a Right something or other.
They do. anyway, Mr. Conroy basically came up on. He's working in stealth at the moment, but he's still selling his wares and doing it very well. He appeared on the ABC's program Hungry Beast.
Now, was that a real
week?
Interview? Because I saw that, and it looked as though they'd stitched the interview together.
No, it was a real...
No, it was a real interview, and if you go to the ABC website and then go through to the Hungry Beast page, you can see the actual interview in its entirety. Now, one of the interviewer there was a guy by the name of, I think, Dan Illick, who's a 28-year-old reporter on that particular show. Hungry Beast is targeted at the Gen Ys. But it's also, you know, fairly mainstream ABC TV as well. But they had an extended interview with Mr. Conroy, and it was an interesting interview. It was good to see him come in from, the younger questions, which he sort of dropped his guard a little bit. But nonetheless, he still maintained the government's spin on all things broadbandish and filterish and stuff like that. So... did any of the panel get to see any of that interview, Dr. On? Yeah,
I did. I saw it on the Hungry Beast as it went to air, and then I watched the extended interview using iView.
Ah, yes.
And it was very interesting. So he said that the Australian government is in discussions with Google at the moment about complying with the new legislation, and that they're wanting Google to censor YouTube.
It's, once again, he's a bit... I don't know who's advising him, but we'll come back to that in just a sec. One of the things he was talking about was the iNet issue with the there were calls from the industry to actually come together and get a code of practice and not have to legislate that. But anyway, this is what Conroy had to say on the Hungry Beast program about the industry's code, which a lot of people have poo-pooed at the moment.
I think that a mature approach by both the movie industry and the internet industry, sitting down, having a conversation, and coming up with a code of practice is the absolute preferable outcome. The problem is, at the moment in Australia, there is no agreement, there is no discussion, there is no dialogue, and people have resorted to court. I would hope to encourage the ISPs and the movie industries to sit down and try and come up with a code of conduct. And let's see where that goes before we start leaping off down the path. But you are seeing in other countries. The UK have talked about introducing laws. The French have talked about introducing laws. This is a worldwide battle. And what would be preferable is industry actually sat down and reached an agreement. In Australia, unfortunately, because of a refusal to even hold a dialogue, and I've been trying for 2 years to encourage the sectors to have a dialogue, they've got themselves into a court battle, which there was a decisive outcome in favour of iiNet and the ISPs. Yeah. But what I would still hope is that we can bring them together to sit down and settle their differences, create a code of practice that actually protects both parties.
It'll never work.
It's a bit late for that, I think.
Absolutely. It's one of those things where you're trying to shut the gate after the horse has bolted. Now, I think we were discussing here on the panel last week that it would be really good to take this appeal to the highest court, and then that's as high as it can go. Done and dusted. No more options there. But then what are they going to do next? Come after consumers with a big stick? Who's going to reveal information to... from an ISP to maybe a legal practitioner to come and pursue those sort of things. That wouldn't happen, would it?
Well, it could. How would an ISP could be?
Well, they're not allowed
required to disclose. Well, they could be ordered to by court.
But that's on a court by court basis.
Yes,
I would have
on a case by case basis. Exactly.
Yeah.
Yes.
So maybe it'll come to that. But anyway, Adam's got some interesting views coming up on View from the Couch tonight too, not about that, but particularly about attitude for downloading things online and stuff. So stay tuned for that. That'll be coming up after our next break.
Mm. We haven't heard that they have AFAC has appealed the decision yet.
No,
have
they
we?
Haven't made their decision up yet. Well, not that we've heard anyway. No.
When's their appeal window closed?
I knew you were going to ask that. I was just looking at my notes here.
They had 15 days from the date of the verdict.
It's got to be close.
Which would
be,
so we've got another week maybe,
Maybe that, yeah. Mm. So it's going to be interesting. But as we all discussed in here last week, hopefully they do go the appeal because then they can go no further. It's done and dusted. Anyway, we'll come back after the break with a little bit more from Mr. Conroy in other areas. Also come back with Adam Turner's View from the Couch. So stick with us. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio. I'm Andrew McComb. Dr. Ron is in. Graham's in. JD's in. And we've got Warlock Skyping in at the moment. And I think Adam's just joined the chat because I just saw his name pop up on my screen. So come along, chat.techtalkradio.com.au.
You're listening to Australia's most informative technology show.
Tech Talk Radio.
Cast your mind back to the 90s.
This is a tad awkward, but not quite as bad as Dr. Ron's choice of music.
Anyway, went in there and that.
Before we got distracted beautifully by that, I was going
to
talk about...
Somebody rings me every day at the moment that wants to change my light globes.
Yep. That's it. It was a challenge and an opportunity, wasn't it?
I don't know. good. Glad you cleared the air on that one.
It's out there.
Yeah, it is. As Mulder would say.
You're listening to Australia's most informative technology show. Tech Talk Radio. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio, proudly sponsored by D-Link, building networks for people.
Yes, thank you very much, D-Link. It's really nice to have them on board again for a little bit more. I think it'd be good.
For 2010?
2010.
Do you say 2010? Do you say 2010?
I don't know.
Or is it still too early to know?
It's a subconscious thing,
isn't
it?
We'll get used to it by the end of the year.
I think I'm a 2010 sort of person.
2010.
Or 2010. I don't know. Depends what the mood takes me. Which side of the river I'm on.
2010 makes sense to me.
We've been saying 2000 and...
Yes, and that's been awkward for 9 years. Yeah, 10 years.
Yeah, 2010's got a ring to it, hasn't
2010.
It?
2010 gets us back on track. It makes it easy to talk about what year it is now. Thank goodness for that.
2010. There's two less syllables in 2010.
Yes. So
there you go.
Correct.
It's quicker to say.
So, welcome to everyone, wherever you might be listening to us, you know, on Weewa. We're still in Weewa in New South Wales.
We are, excellent.
In New Zealand. Oh, look, we get around. We certainly do. Anyway, and in the pod. And if you're not listening to us, I guess, as a radio show, you're missing out on all the AC/DC music because AC/DC are in Melbourne tonight, where we originate from, creating ear damage to a lot of young people as we speak. And I think during the course of the break there, JD was saying there's issues with the audio. You were saying
they're saying the vocal quality is pretty ordinary in the stadium and you can't hear Angus singing.
Have you heard firsthand from someone who's been there?
I'm just marvelling at this concept. The audio quality of the singing is a problem with AC/DC.
I did question it myself, I've got to say. But yeah, friends of mine that have been in there were saying that they had a bit of trouble, their ears bleeding.
Ears bleeding?
Yeah, not quite that bad.
Goodness me. Anyway, I've got Brian from the offices in there tonight too, so I'll do a lot of lip syncing tomorrow and see if he works out.
Doing audio on that scale is a bit of a challenge, but you'd think that someone like that would be able to get it right. It's
a big show.
Yeah, it's a big show. Big show. They would have put a lot into it, yeah.
And how's this for a coincidence? When I'm in the United States in a couple of weeks' time, so is AC/DC. They're playing at the MGM Grand in Las Vegas while I'm staying at the Hilton.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah. They're following us around the world as we go. But anyway, that's not important right now. Let's talk.
I wonder if they're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Not currently.
Probably right now at the moment. Yeah.
Probably up there.
Oh, they listen to the podcast later, of course.
Yeah, it's a long way to the shop if you want a sausage roll. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Who's going to do Tech Talk Radio while you're on the other side of the earth?
No, we're having a holiday. Did I tell you?
Really?
Oh. Thank goodness for that. Yay.
Are we coming too?
It's up to you if you want. Let me know. I've got 20 kilos per bag, haven't I? Is that how it works?
If I'll doctor run up into one of your bags.
I'm just a little fella. I'll fit in your carry-on luggage. Just throw me the handful of peanuts here and there.
Let's talk a little bit about downloads. One of the things that Conroy came out, he was going to talk about peer-to-peer networking and piracy and stuff like that. I guess the TV networks in particular are certainly encouraging peer-to-peer downloads of certain television programs, of which obviously the manufacturers of said content are getting a little bit up in arms about, which was testament at the iNet case just the other day.
Yes, well, the if the originators of the shows are worried that people are downloading it instead of watching it on Channel 7, for just to pick a random example, Channel 7, perhaps what those content providers should do is make sure that Channel 7 broadcasts their shows in a responsible manner and doesn't chop scenes out of it at random to fit more ads in and doesn't randomly change the time slot and starts it at 8:30 if they say in the listing it's going to start at 8:30 and not treat the people who are watching like morons.
But otherwise, they do a good job.
You can see really, Graham at Slash Rand.
Do they really chop scenes out just to...
Yes, to fit more ads in. And the shows already run less time in Australia than they do in America.
So I'll have to pull your fader down in a minute. Can I just say, having worked for a network in my early days, yes, that's common practice to make it run the actual time that they need to, because 30 seconds to them is... It's dollars.
In a half-hour show, they've already got an extra 30-second ad in just by virtue of the standards conversion because it runs a bit faster.
Not so much these days when it comes in on digital because we all run 1080i now.
But then there are some channels in Melbourne that run quarter of an hour overtime in any case. So I don't
you're still talking about it being made in 60 frame, in 30 frames and played in 25.
Well, I guess you could argue that it depends on how it originates.
It depends on how it's originated, yes. Yeah. But if it originated on a film or in a progressive format at 24 frames per second and is played here at 25 frames per second, then it doesn't take as long to play.
Now, I thought you were mad when you said that first many months ago. And
yeah,
I thought,
you did, and I proved
Graham,
it to you.
Is Graham going off
he's
again?
He's made it up, yes.
He's made it up. And I noticed it in a program that's I watch quite a lot, which I think is very funny, which is 2.5 Men.
Yep.
Oh, dear, and if I watch that... I watched that on television a lot, and then I was in the position that I was watching it from... It was recorded as an AVI file from... Yes. You know, recorded in the United States.
So instead of hearing it in Australia converted, you heard the original unconverted.
Yes.
Is it less funnier when it's slower?
It's... The pitch of the music in the
correct
opening, yes, is noticeably lower. That's a lower pitch.
Yes, that's right. I tell you where I notice it, and I don't have perfect pitch like some people do. I notice it in Law and Order where they've got that chord that plays in between scenes, a ding-ding.
Ding-ding, yes.
Yeah, in Law and Order. And I've noticed that that's at a different pitch. And I also noticed that the voiceover at the start of Law and Order that says, the criminal justice system is... Rah, 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 is a different pitch.
Actually talks like me.
So, yes, it's noticeable. You do notice that. You do notice that difference because it's made to play on 30 fields per second American TV, but it's made at 24 frames per second film. Even if it's not made on film, it's made on a progressive video format that is at 24 frames a second.
Just a bit of education here. There's 60 fields in a second.
30
frames a second as to 25 frames a second in Australia. Or 24 for feature film.
Yeah. And of course, if it's made at 24, you can convert it to 60 fields really easily by just scanning each alternate field either twice and then the next one three times and the next one twice and the next one three times, and you end up with 60. And that plays well on American TV.
Should we talk about pull down?
Does Senator Conroy even know about this?
No, sorry. When you convert it to Australia, it's easier just to play it at 25 and it just goes a tiny bit faster and no one notices except people with perfect pitch.
But also, most TV stations, I know because I've got a machine that goes bing at the office as well, you can actually say, oh, look, if I mark an in point and an out point here and there,
you can
it runs, say, 5 minutes 30. And okay, can you make that run 5 minutes 15? And it will alter the pitch and it will run it just that much bit faster and no one knows the difference.
We were talking about broadband and Senator Conroy was going to say something helpful.
That was before the break and we're going to talk a bit more about that after the break. But in the meanwhile, Adam Turner has a view from the couch on this very topic. And here it is.
Should Australia's free-to-air broadcasters try to win back BitTorrent users or just beat them into submission? After years of mistreatment, previously loyal Australian viewers have finally discovered how easy it is to download popular shows such as Desperate Housewives, Heroes and Lost, taking back control from the local networks. In light of iiNet's legal victory in the High Court, which found ISPs cannot be held accountable for customers' downloading activities, Australia's television networks need a new strategy in the battle against illegal downloading. The question is, should they use the carrot or the stick? Currently, Lost is screening on Network 7's digital-only 7-2, 8 days behind the US. To further complicate things, Seven screened the initial double episode of Lost on 7-2 last Wednesday night, and then afterwards they screened the first episode only on Seven's main channel. So the main channel is already an episode behind. It's like they're going out of their way to confuse people. Now, in order to combat online piracy, Seven Network director Ryan Stokes last week proposed simultaneous broadcast times between Australia and the United States. Now, while the idea might be noble, Seven's previous attempts to fast-track shows such as Lost were quickly abandoned. It would obviously be impractical to screen programs simultaneously in the US and Australia. For example, Lost screens at 9 p.m. on Tuesdays on ABC in the US, which would be early Wednesday afternoon in Australia. Even if Seven held off for a few hours and screened Lost on Wednesday evenings, it would then leave Seven held captive to the ABC's US programming schedule. History would suggest that it wouldn't take long for Seven to fall behind. What seems to be lost on Stokes and Seven's programmers is that Australians don't download shows like Lost because of when they screen, but because of how they screen. All of Australia's commercial networks have a sordid history of treating their viewers badly. They make it so hard to watch your favourite show that it's easier and more reliable just to download it from the internet. Free-to-air broadcasters would seem to have two key options when it comes to winning back free-to-air viewers. Treat them with respect and entice them back, or call in the lawyers and drive them back. Respect for viewers would require a major cultural shift from old-world media giants who still think they can dictate how, when, and where content is consumed. If they really wanted to show respect for their viewers, here's a list of things they could start with. Don't start the show late. Don't continually switch time slots. Don't deliberately alter the electronic program guide data to disrupt seasons past recordings. Don't give away too much of the plot and the promos. Don't slip repeats into the schedule to stretch out the series. Don't stop mid-series and claim it's the end of the season. Don't saturate the show with advertising. Don't fade to an ad before the scene is finished. Don't cut out parts of the show to fit in more ads. Don't pump up the volume in the advertisements. Don't scroll promos for other shows across the bottom of the screen on top of what I'm trying to watch. Now, if the networks could make such a pact with viewers, it might win people back from BitTorrent. Sadly, it's easier to just keep treating people like idiots and then call in the lawyers.
Entertaining, informative, and independent. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
So there you go.
Do they really fade to ads before the scene's finished? That's atrocious.
Yes. I've seen that on Go.
That's dreadful.
Yeah. Really?
Yeah.
Oh, no wonder people just give up with free to air.
It's very frustrating, isn't it?
That's incredible.
Yeah, in fact, I've been watching Blackadder on Go, and they just completely obliterate the
punchline.
The punchline and the entrance scenes on the second episode. So they run back-to-back episodes, literally back-to-back, without the credits or any introduction.
But as Adam was saying there, I think Lost runs on a Tuesday night at about whatever time it was, but it equates to being Wednesday, a bit after lunch, for us here in Australia. But I would have thought that contractually they could do a deal where we'll provide you the feed, but you've got to run it the same day. But anyway, obviously it's a programming-related issue that if the Super Bowl comes up in the US, they might drop it that night. So what does Channel 7 do? They'll have to drop it too, won't they? Take the Super Bowl.
I thought that's what all their super-duper fast promos were about. Remember there was a whole sequence of promos that we've downloaded it from the US and we'll show you it within a week or whatever it was?
Yeah.
I can't remember what the terms they used to use, but wasn't that the whole idea of that? Fast Track, yeah, that's the one.
Fast Track.
Yeah. And both Channel 7 and Channel 10 made a big virtue out of this at different times with different shows.
Adam, are you listening to us? Come in, Adam.
Fast Track, and they gave up on it, I think, because it didn't make a difference.
Hi, Adam, how you doing?
Yeah, Adam's come in too.
Yeah, good, mate.
So what was it? Sorry,
I couldn't let a Warlock have all the glory.
He's still there too, so just... but what are you saying about Fast Track?
Oh, just they both tried it. Seven made a big deal of it with Lost a couple of seasons ago, like I said, but they gave up because I don't think it actually made a difference.
Okay. So, but they couldn't do anything contractually, obviously, because they obviously have other commitments. Like if, say, ABC in America go to the Super Bowl, then Channel 7 are left high and dry. Is that really the reason behind it?
Well, exactly. Or what if the tennis or something is on here? You know, what if the grand final's on and the Lost is on at the same time? It won't work. They can't stick to each other's schedules.
Well, I guess that's it. But at the end of the day, I guess all the other points that you made in that piece too about the volume and chopping things off and bailing out early in the promos, giving it all away, that's all valid too. If you wanted to run like a successful sequential program, why would you want to see it all in bits beforehand? That'd drive you crazy, wouldn't it? So obviously people are going to go to peer-to-peer.
So what's the solution though? Because people are going to want this content straight away. They know it's gone to air 3 weeks ago in America, and why haven't I seen it yet? So what's the solution? Are we going to end up with one of Channel 9's extra channels is going to be NBC and one of Channel 7's extra channels is going to be CBS?
I think the rights would just be too complicated to do that.
Mm. It would be, wouldn't it? It's just Pandora's box.
Because they sign different rights for different regions, different shows and everything. But is
that whole system going to fall in a heap?
They're going to hold it together for as long as they can.
Mm.
But when do you think they'll finally learn? That's the thing, isn't it? Because obviously what's happened in the media lately with iiNet is certainly not going to slow people's consciences down. So they're just going to be hammering those peer-to-peer sites thinking, oh, well, they're not going to get my details, are they? So it's they're going to have to work something out sooner. Like, look what the record industry did. I think they've got their act together now, but maybe the movie industry is just 15 years behind.
The music industry is starting to get its act together and to sell content online in a sensible way, but mainly because Apple's forced them to.
Mm.
Yeah, but Apple still wants $3 for an episode of Lost, which is $2 in the US. And it's ridiculous. If they're talking about dropping it to $1 a show. If we got it for $1 a show in Australia for an episode of Lost, I would think about paying that $1 rather than going to BitTorrent.
But the networks, the thing, isn't it?
The networks are going to scream.
People will pay it if they make it reasonable. But if they lock down the rights so you can only play it in the iTunes screen, you can't play it on any other device, or you can't move it to your Apple TV Apple TV they probably can play it on, but your WDTV Live to play it. Then,
well, that's the thing. You won't be able to do any of that because your WDTV Live isn't going to play iTunes content with Apple encryption on it.
Well, that's right.
It's going to play unencrypted. So it is.
But eventually, iTunes got to the point where with music they started removing the DRM on it, so you could go and play it on your Zune or your Creative Player or whatever it happened to be.
It's a long time before you'll see that on video, I reckon.
If it's too hard and it costs money, then people aren't going to do it.
That's exactly right.
Doing what they're doing right now.
If they make it easy and it costs money, then people will do it.
Piracy is like shoplifting. Yeah, sorry, go, Warlock.
There was talk that once Apple had said, okay, they can sell their songs for $1.29, Apple said, well, we'll only let you do that if you let us take the DRM off, and that's when it happened. But anybody with video, like a television station and movies and stuff, they're just stuck in their old system, and they're very reluctant to change. They've always done it that way, and they're happy with it done that way, and everybody else, they can get sued.
But surely getting some revenue is better than everybody just getting it off BitTorrent and not getting any revenue at all.
No, it's not everybody. It's still a small enough thing that they can write it off as a loss. It's like shoplifting. There's an acceptable number of losses that you put up with before you introduce extra safeguards to stop people stealing it because it's not worth it.
Mm.
In the bigger scheme of people, there's probably not a lot. You know, if 50%, if the viewers drop by half tomorrow because 50% of people were downloading it, they do something. But I think the numbers are still small enough for video at least that they think they can fight it off just ignore it.
Let me give you one counter example to that. You say it's a limited market, but how many people in Melbourne found themselves unable to get their hands on a copy of the first season of Underbelly?
Oh, I had one.
Everybody had one.
Yeah, that is an exception to the rule, though.
But it shows that it can happen.
Yeah, it can happen, but I think that is the exception to the rule.
Mm.
All right, well, peer-to-peer is not in the government's filtering sites. This is what Conroy had to say about it on Hungry Beast the other night.
How will blocking websites tackle the issue of child porn, NRC, when there's a myriad of other channels like VPN, peer-to-peer, email attachments, Facebook?
That's one of the claims that people have tried to make, that I've said that this filter can deal with that. We've never said that. We accept absolutely that peer-to-peer is not going to be captured by this. And a whole range of other things you've just described are not captured.
It seems to me this is like putting a dam in the middle of the ocean.
Look, it's sort of like saying, well, if you can't block something 100%, if you can't stop something 100% with a government law, you shouldn't bother having the law. Sure. So, look, we should get rid of the underage drinking laws.
Give me a good hard go.
Yeah, no, look, we should get rid of the underage drinking laws because kids still manage to find ways to get around the law and have drinks. We should get rid of speeding laws because some Australians still speed. A government has to give its best endeavours. We accept there are limitations to the technology. It's why we had the trial.
Yeah, best endeavours.
But that's a
bit of spin there, I think, in a lot of respects.
It's also a flawed analogy. It's still illegal to have, even without his filter, it's still illegal to have refused classification content.
We've already got legislation.
There's already law that says that.
Yeah, that governs what we can and can't have.
Enforce the existing laws. The filter isn't necessary. It's like, to his analogy with underage drinking would be to set up roadblocks to stop alcohol deliveries because they might be delivered to underage children. Yes. That would be the analogy.
Correct. It doesn't cut it, does it?
he's missed the point entirely.
Breweries.
Yes, exactly.
What was that, Adam? Something about breweries?
Put speed humps outside the breweries.
Yeah, on the freeway on the way to it, absolutely. But that's just it. It's just half-baked in a lot of respects. It doesn't quite cut it for me, and I think most of the rest of Australia are coming along with the same lines as well.
It seems to me bizarre that he's acknowledging that. Look, he's saying, look, the party's never said that the filter is going to stop peer-to-peer file sharing or FTP or news groups or email. So what's the point? Why are we wasting our money on some half-assed system that's not going to have any effect?
Absolutely. In a lot of respects, this is what he had to say when it came to misleading the public. He accused EFA, Electronic Frontiers of Australia, of misleading, and he was sort of getting his Nelly in a knot a little bit about it, but this is what he had to say about that.
Most Australians have been misled about what the government is intending. There's a number of organisations, and Electronic Frontiers is probably at the top of the list, that have deliberately misled Australians about what we're intending, which is very disappointing. I'm happy to have the debate. I'm happy to come on TV and explain what we're doing, but you've got a number of organisations that are deliberately misleading most Australians about what we're proposing. If I can just finish by repeating again, you can't buy it on the bookshelves today. You can't get it from a newsagent, you can't watch it at the movies, you can't see it in a newspaper, and you can't see it at the movies. This is material that is today refused classification. And that is the only material that we are talking about, including in the filter.
And the existing laws are sufficient to prevent you importing that same material over the internet. The laws cover that. So prosecute the people who are importing the refused classification material using the internet under the existing laws. You don't need your filter, Mr. Conroy.
Yes, it's a bit like that, isn't it? And I think if you look at it, yeah, the laws are in place, aren't they, Graham? And
they are.
Filtering is just an election promise from the previous election, which they said they'd do. So
yeah, because it sounds good.
Anyway, maybe we'll take
it. He didn't actually say what EFA misled the public about.
Oh,
he said they misled the public, but he didn't say what they said that was wrong.
Look, that interview, which is on Hungry Beast, go and have a look at it, because there's a lot of questions that remain unanswered after it, which was, it was a good interview, don't get me wrong, but it was just they could have pursued a lot of other avenues too. So
You can go to hungrybeast.abc.net.au.
I will be doing that later.
Hopefully, if you're living in Australia, you'll be able to view it. If you're outside the country,
you'll
need to get creative, but you should be able to.
Use a VPN. That's what we're all going to be doing very shortly.
to bypass Conroy's internet filters.
Well, going back to that, Apple's about to hit their 10 billionth song download, and they're going to give away a $10,000 gift card to those out there.
I saw that on iTunes the other day.
Each of which they've sold for a dollar or two.
That's right. getting back to the conversation before, it's the movie and TV network corporations getting their head around, if they make things cheap enough, they'll sell it to the billions of people legitimately, rather than the hundreds of thousands or millions that they're currently doing.
And surely selling it to even a few hundred thousand people for a couple of dollars or a dollar
still gets a return, you would think.
It's going to get them more return than if everybody just downloads it.
Mm. So, I mean, and Andrew's, obviously involved in the game and can comment a bit more authoritatively, but you've still got to put the money into production to get the quality that people are wanting, but surely there's a return in 10 billion downloads.
Yes. What happens is that traditionally profits are made in the market for which it was originally made for. In case of television, look at Lost, for example. It would earn its money and it's budgeted on its local domestic market.
Through selling ads on, is it NBC or whoever? Yes, whoever it goes to.
Well, whoever buys the rights to it.
ABC, my apologies.
But once it's been aired in the United States, it's paid for. So when they then, and I use the word dump loosely, but when it hits other markets, it's purely icing on the cake for these manufacturers over there. So as a result, it ends up literally being dumped over here. So it's just a bit more for them. So, and that's the model that I think a lot of people have got to get used to. You know, they bring on TV tax like the UK's got. I'm gladly pay 100 quid a year to have good quality television.
So interestingly, the lesson for Channel 7 here is not to try and make money by showing Lost. The lesson for Channel 7 is to try and make money from making a good local program that everybody wants to watch all over the world.
Absolutely. Like, if you can make it locally here and sell it.
Like Channel 10 do with Neighbours.
Yeah.
Well, in fact, like Channel 7 started to do with Neighbours.
Yeah, I worked on that when it was back there. That was back in the good old days, wasn't it? But look, I think there's a lot going for it. You look at some of the other production companies here in Australia, and they're all trying to do that same thing, make good quality local content which they can sell overseas, whether it be... Whether it be a sporting show, you know, whatever. The possibilities are there, but you have to make your money in your local market.
And there's people who are making good television in Australia.
Yeah. Don't look at me. Sorry.
Now, Senator Conroy had a swipe at Google.
Oh, yes, he did. And you mentioned about it on the news, didn't you?
Yeah. He said...
they can filter it for us.
He said, come on, Google, toe the line. We'd really rather not have to block Google.com and Google.com.au... It'd be nice if you were able to prohibit, refuse classification content being streamed on YouTube to Australians.
This is where the confusion's coming in, because Google is... He was referring to YouTube for content, not for the search. Because all Google does, it returns...
Search results.
Search results. It doesn't filter anything.
Yeah.
You can still go to that website if you know where to go.
Google owns YouTube, so that's why YouTube gets involved.
The people that he is trying to protect are not finding their websites on Google.
No.
You know, and
they're not watching their child porn on YouTube.
No, absolutely.
YouTube already has acceptable use policies in place, and it polices those
and they do
well.
Take down videos.
They do.
They actively take YouTube. Stuff down.
Sorry, Adam?
Sorry, it's hard on this thing to butt in without cutting people off. YouTube
should be in here.
You drive to my house. We'll do it from my house.
Sorry, go on.
Next week it's at Warlock's house. We're all going to Warlock's place.
Off you go.
YouTube just introduced opt-in content filtering on top of the acceptable use policy you already have. You can basically turn on a family-friendly filter and block everything anything that they think might be unsavory, but it's opt-in and then password protected.
A Google spokesperson said that, described the proposed Australian net filter as the first of its kind amongst Western democracies, and criticised the proposal to block RC content as being too broad and being likely to block information which can inform debate of controversial issues.
Absolutely. Here's what Conroy had to say.
So we're currently in discussions with Google about whether or not and how we can work this through.
So there'll be a case where an overseas company will be administering Australian law.
Well, they currently do administer Australian law. I mean, people don't understand that Google at the moment filter more websites and packets than anyone in the world. They are the leading web filterer. And they should be, because there is a lot of material that sometimes gets posted on YouTube, which is a problem. And YouTube and Google take it down. YouTube take it down, as they should. And what we're saying is, well, in Australia, these are our laws, and we'd like you to apply our laws. And so we think that where we can reasonably work with them, we're able to do it. I mean, Google at the moment filter an enormous amount of material on behalf of the Chinese government. They filter an enormous amount of material on behalf of the Thai government. Around the world, Germany, France, countries that have said certain material is offensive, Google accept that. Most Australians have been misled about what the government is intending.
There you go.
Why is he he's intentionally making analogies with China. Yes. What is wrong with the man? Honestly, it's beyond comprehension.
I didn't know we were like China over here, but maybe that's what they're trying to build.
Oh,
thank you.
Dear. Well, Google's probably said...
He's making AFA's argument for them.
He really is. Google's probably saying, who is this country, this Australia? Their GDP, we make that in a day. I mean, we were seriously going to be worried about what this little Conroy man's saying. I think, yes, if the Australian government tries to take on Google, I know who my money's going to be on.
Apart from which, I can't imagine anything that would be refused classification in Australia that would be acceptable under... and even close to acceptable under YouTube's acceptable use policy.
Absolutely. And then, yes, we're all speechless now.
But that's hardly filtering, is it?
Poor old Google thought that China was going to be the thorn in their side, and it ends up being us.
Yeah,
well, hardly. Yeah. And the really sad thing about it is most of Google's best stuff comes out of Australia. You look at maps and all that. Last made that, based here in Sydney and all that sort of stuff. So, yeah, anyway, you're listening to Tech Talk Radio. We're talking about Senator Conroy's latest incident in the media and trying to upsell his filtering system. The panel is growing. Who knows who's going to be on the panel after we play this next track? But at the moment, we've got Dr. Ron, Justin's here, Graham's here, I'm here, and we've also got Adam, who's joined us, and Warlock is a guest this evening in from Sydney, one of our regular listeners, to contribute to some of these bits and pieces. Back with more after this.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio, proudly sponsored by D-Link, building networks for people.
Now, let's talk about Freeview.
Hey, someone just joined the wave.
They're the people I want to avoid the calls from.
Comes in very handy, especially when your files get really, really big and corruption takes place.
So you want AA.
Dude, it's not even a beta. It's just for us to play around with.
They also cited taxes and freight costs.
Just mount it on your desktop and run it direct.
It's a big risk.
Oh, you watch the webcam.
Yeah.
You're listening to Australia's most informative technology show, Tech Talk Radio.
Greetings, everyone. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio, Australia's one-way technology radio show.
And the man who made that jingle is joined us on Skype at the moment. That's Warlock, Jason up there in Sydney. Thank you for your rascally rabbit, Jason. It's been good. And the other one, there's an Elmer Fudd one too. So, hey, one question for you. You spoke recently about maybe doing an Apple app for us for Tech Talk Radio. Any sign of that on the horizon?
Oh. An Apple app?
Yeah, you when you spoke to the man who's now longer not with us, which is Adam Turner, you mentioned you were potentially toying with an Apple app for Tech Talk Radio?
Yeah, well, we could do just about anything.
Oh, there you go. See, that's all I can do attitude. Really good. And speaking of Apple iPhones at the moment, there's a wonderful little application where you can listen to us anywhere. Streaming. It's called Wonder Radio, WUNDR Radio. Just search for it in the App Store. And providing you've got some good bandwidth, you can tune into 3WBC, which is where we stream from on a Monday night from 8 p.m. live. Wherever you are, anywhere in the world, terrific little app. And just one button away and you can hear us and millions of other radio stations around the world. Some good little apps for the iPhone. Wonder if it works on the iPad. You got one yet? No?
No, keep asking.
I will keep asking. Someone brought some chocolate cake in tonight. Thank you, Lainey. That's beautiful. Absolutely.
Can that's you just play another music track so we can eat this cake?
Very quiet on the other side of the panel because you can't eat and talk on the radio at the same time.
That's it.
Yeah, that's very good.
Absolutely.
Yes.
All right, what else should we talk about this evening on the radio? We've talked about our pranks. If you've got any tech pranks, send them in because they're really good.
Yes.
We had a few. We had three already, which is good. So
techprank.tiktok.
No, it doesn't work at all. Set that alias. Sorry. Just come to the radio and just click on the icon of Steve Jobs on the top of the screen.
I just invented that.
Did you?
Yeah. At the Tech Talk Radio website.
Yeah, that's it. That's the one.
www.techtalkradio.com.au. And while you're there, click on the D-Link banner at the top because they're very good supporting our show.
Oh, they are indeed. So, anyway. Now, we spoke briefly about the industries and Conroy's pitch to everyone to get together and have a powwow about censorship. Well, as you guessed, the industry has rejected that. Internet Industry Association Peter Koronis has rejected the calls from the minister to resume to actually get together and do what they said. So it's going to take a while for all that to sort of sort itself out, I think. But anyway, we'll see what happens. Now, some other interesting news which I came across today. Telstra released one of their Telstra press releases, spruiking the commissioning, if that's the correct word, of their new fast 42 megabit per second HSPA. Not D. There's no D in it. Or is there a D in it?
High speed packet access, yes. HSPA.
But they call it Plus now, which goes really, really fast, allegedly. But the thing is, not too many people out there have a modem that does 42 meg, if you can get the maximum throughput.
I was on a Telstra modem, which proudly had 7.2 megabits per second stamped on it in nice shiny letters.
Was it a blue one?
It was a blue one.
I've got one of those.
Yep, and it said on it had the speed, so you were very excited about how fast it was going to go. I had a strength meter that said 100% signal strength. I could see the tower out through the window where I was sitting. I was in a major suburb of Melbourne.
So you would have got 7 meg, 7.1 meg down?
I went to speedtest.net and got around about 3 meg.
Yay! Oh. Yeah. Yeah, that's the real world, though. I must admit, I've achieved a maximum that I've measured is around about 5 or 6 meg on the little blue key that I think you're speaking of.
Mm.
But 42 meg, I think, is just people are just deluding themselves, and I think the telcos are absolutely deluding themselves too, if that be the case. And
well, I think it goes one step worse than that. To combine the two things that you said, I think what they're actually doing is they are deluding us.
Yeah, that too. Misleading.
Misleading, perhaps, even. Yes.
If I'm able to get 42 megabits per second on my home wired ADSL 2 Plus connection, well, anytime in the next 10 years,
you won't,
I'd be very happy.
Because that's faster than ADSL 2 Plus goes.
If I'm able to get any sort of internet over any technology on a piece of twisted pair cable at that speed, I'd be impressed. Yes. It's never going to happen in wireless.
No.
In reality.
No. All right.
Certainly not in any quantities.
No.
Let's talk a little bit about social networking, Twitter and the likes. You guys, well, we all tweet here. Well, some of us tweet. Oh, that's a very gross generalisation. Graham sort of has
Graham's
an account.
Graham's got a Twitter account.
He's got an account.
I often put in tweets that say things like, you know, hanging out with at GC248 and...
Oh, do you?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
People probably read those occasionally. Yeah, yeah.
People probably click on that and go, "Oh, it's blocked." And now you have to ask to follow you. I think
yes.
So my question
is, Graham doesn't actually reply to you when you do that.
Oh, sorry.
No, you try email. That's even
don't
worse.
Either.
But let's talk about where we get our news and information from these days. Like within the tech world, do you rely on a website, or do you rely on people's tweets or a collective tweet from specific organisations? Where do you look at to get your news these days?
Not Mac from Twitter. I get tweets from Macworld and various other Mac sites.
Hmm. So I think the days of, going to a news site, probably we're now into the secondary phase where we receive our...
Absolute twaddle.
Okay, that's good.
I think there's a bit of aggregation though. There were a couple of websites that have been taken down. I haven't found a good replacement, but there were a couple of websites that aggregated all the news about a particular subject. And in my case, of course, Apple Computers was the one I was interested in. And it would have all of the Mac rumor sites and all of the product release sites all about that one subject all on one web page. And it was just brilliant. But it was a sponsored
rumors
site.
Are not news.
Well, in the Mac world, they are.
Wow.
There you go. Does anyone use Dig?
Nope.
Dig
I follow Dig every day just about, and if I find anything interesting there, I retweet it.
So what's so good about Tweet, Jason? Dig, Jason, is it because of the quality of the news, or what do you find in it?
Well, they have a heck of a lot of it. That's the main thing, and just pick out the bits and pieces that I like and retweet it using a Bitly shortcut to there, and I can also, using the Bitly, I can see the stats of who clicked on it when and how many times and all that sort of stuff, so I find that interesting.
But is it news that you're getting from Dig, or is it something else? Is it social information and social interaction that you're getting from Dig?
For myself, personally, yeah. I just passively watch it as news and repost the interesting things. I don't actually join in that much in the discussions or anything, but they do have where you can comment on news articles and talk to other people and that sort of thing, but mostly I just read it passively for the tech news.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? Lydia Davis, our US correspondent, had a chat during the course of the week to Andy Sorsini, who is otherwise known as Mr. Baby Man, if you listen to The Drill Down, which is the show that she's on. But Andy's been a long-time contributor to Dig, and actually he's probably, we'll put it this way, what he chooses to contribute does exceptionally well. Anyway, so during the course of the week, Lyd caught up with Andy just to have a bit of a chat, and this is their little discussion about where Dig and social networking and things like that are all heading.
I managed to have a chat with Andy Sorsini last week, possibly better known online as the man behind the username Mr. Babyman. While he's recognised across a variety of social sites, in fact, Slate.com last year crowned him the king of all social media, most people on the web would consider him the king of Dig. Almost a third of the content that Andy submitted to Dig has hit front page, and at over 4,000 pieces of content, those are impressive numbers. Andy, who for his day job is a film editor in LA, has been involved with Dig for over 4 years. And tonight he talks to us about his fascination with Dig, the changing landscape of Dig due to the rise of real-time technology such as Twitter, Facebook, and the more recent Google Buzz. He also discusses Dig's future and tells you what you need to know and what you need to do if you want to become part of the Dig community.
I am a film editor by trade, but I've always been fascinated with technology. And I think that comes in part because of what I do. I work with computers all day. Film editing is primarily all done on nonlinear editing systems on computers. And I have built several of my own computer systems from scratch. So because of that, because of my fascination with technology, I used to watch Tech TV, which was a basic cable channel until it was purchased by G4 TV.
And Tech TV had a show called The Screensavers. And on The Screensavers, there were a number of hosts, including Leo Laporte, who's famous on the internet now with his own podcast, and Kevin Rose, who also used to co-host the show. When Tech TV was purchased by G4 and the Screensavers show became Attack of the Show, a lot of those hosts, those Tech TV hosts, were basically given their pink slips and went on to other things. And one of the things that Kevin Rose went on to was hosting a podcast called Dignation. And I wasn't aware at the time that he was actually the founder of Dig.com. Dignation was a podcast that chronicled the top stories on Dig. And so it was really Dignation that drew me into Dig.com. So watching Dignation led me to the site, Dig.com, which led me to participate in the site. My fascination with Dig is it's up to the users of the site to choose what content gets to the front page. What really draws me to Dig is the ability for me to find the cool stuff that I like on the internet and disseminate it to as broad an audience as possible. That's really my goal, is to get the cool stuff from the internet and spread it out to as many people as possible. And when a story hits the front page and thousands of people see it, that to me, I feel like I've contributed just a little bit in the collective enhancement of people's cultural experience. Typically, I spend anywhere from 4 to 6 hours, either before work or after work. And in cases like this, where I am in between jobs, I can spend a little bit more time. And it's a lot of fun, you know, and it doesn't really get in the way of anything else that I'm doing. So it's basically a fun pastime to find the cool stuff on the net and promote it. As an online entity, if you want to get value from the site, you really have to understand the audience. Because understanding the audience is really understanding the zeitgeist of popular culture. And once you understand that, you can cater your content to that audience, and your content has a chance at being popular with the Dig audience and getting promoted. Recently, they've got a feature where they have breaking news on the site, where you can, where if a site is getting a lot of traffic in a short period of time and it seems to be something that is immediately relevant, they'll put it right up on the front page and you can vote on it, on whether or not you want to see it on the front page immediately rather than wait the period of time that it normally takes for a story to get promoted. So they really are earnestly trying to keep in touch with their community. I think they really understand that they're kind of behind the curve now with Twitter and Facebook and now Google Buzz. They understand that they've got a little bit of catch up to do. From what I understand, they are in the process of developing new initiatives to address that. If you look at the sheer traffic numbers, they are absolutely the market leader. But having said that, their traffic numbers are on the downturn as well. They're not hitting the same numbers that they used to 6 months ago. Dig is, from what I understand, trying to integrate real-time data into their feed. From what I understand, part of their emerging initiative is to bring Twitter and Facebook, that data from what's happening out there, into Dig's data stream and make that part of what the community also votes on. They absolutely have to evolve in that direction. Otherwise, they are going to stagnate. One of my pet peeves from way back, and still is a bit, is the lack of ongoing communication between the Dig administration and the regular users of the site. I had asked them a long time ago to initiate a forum where users can speak with the Dig administration on a regular basis and ask questions or submit issues that are Dig-centric and not just related to the articles themselves. And I know that that's one of their back burner initiatives that they've got in development, but I have no idea if that'll ever get promoted to the front, if that idea will ever be folded into their current plans. I'm going to compare them to their next biggest competitor, which is Reddit. The Reddit administration is constantly working with the community ability to improve the site. The whole site is open source. It's built into the site to want to improve it. I think that maybe, I don't know, whether it's Dig is just too complex and unwieldy an organization to allow that sort of regular interaction or what the issue is. But I think that they absolutely need to maintain a regular line of communication with their users.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio, proudly sponsored by D-Link, building networks for people.
It's interesting to see how things are perceived in different countries because this is my perspective only. I don't know. I don't use Dig, and I don't know anyone who does. But
I've been there a fair bit because you get referred there by various other sites. So I've used Dig from that point of view, and always click through to the source.
See it on all the articles. Dig this, I guess that's just your vote to push it up to the Dig scale.
That's what it does. It registers a vote on the Dig.com website, which is DIGG.com, and based on popularity, it'll push stories higher and higher up the list. So the stories that get the most number of votes are the ones that you're going to see come out first when you go to their website.
The problem is they're not all valid news stories. There's a lot of blogs and general discussion and stuff that's
top
interesting,
10.
But not necessarily news in the correct sense.
One of
the
funniest lolcat videos or something week, and you get some strange off.
And I'm not saying there's not a good place for that. I'm just challenging the assertion that that's the new news.
We started this conversation last week with Adam about what's news these days,
and I think it's
social comment.
Well, I think it's going to be part of the tech conversation for a little while, because, and people like Rupert Murdoch have firmly put it on the agenda with the comments that they've made about how they're going to deal with producing actual real news. And also with the phenomenal success of so-called news outlets like Fox News in America in particular. So I think what's news, what's quality news? Do consumers want actual news as opposed to just social content?
And, well, you're not going to find a stock market report on Twitter, are you?
You're not going to know.
That's where you have to go to a qualified site which you trust.
And you're not going to find an in-depth, well-researched, sort of long-term, major-breaking, political intrigue type story on there either.
That's right.
Because that takes time and resources to do. Yeah.
Yeah.
But it will appear somewhere else first.
That's the problem. The papers aren't making money, so who's going to fund?
You should see the magazines. Did you see that thing on the ABC the other night about the future of magazines? It's going to be quite interesting to see how they're all going tabloid now.
Mm. Oh, okay.
All, funny, big glamorous photos and all that sort of stuff. But anyway.
Hmm.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio. The things we were going to talk about tonight, which we aren't, which we'll carry forward to next week. Windows 7's getting tough new anti-piracy checks.
Oh, is this the Mad Minute?
Yeah, this is the Mad Minute. The Mad 30 seconds.
We need a stopwatch timer
now.
Yeah, I can nail it pretty quick tonight. Wireless internet eats into fixed broadband market. Settle.
Okay, it was good.
Telstra profits on hold as people abandon landlines. Yeah. Well, do you reckon that was always going to be?
Is that news? That's been going on for a while.
No, that's right. Our iPad secret sauce is the software. Anyway, that was an article at APC, which we're going to have a bit of a chat about. Open source is not free, according to Senate inquiries. So,
open source is free in the sense of free speech, but not necessarily free in the sense of free beer.
Yeah. Oh, really? Is beer involved? Well, we have to come back.
No. Let's,
excellent.
Beer.
Do a search on those terms. You'll find out what the analogy is all about.
All right. We might talk about it next week. We've got time.
Yes.
Maybe.
Yes. I'd be glad to explain that next week.
OddSpot Gadget website of the week coming up after this.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio, proudly sponsored by D-Link, building networks for people.
Suffering suck attack. This has to be the best technology show on the internet. Tech Talk Radio.
Google been taken to court for forgery.
eBay was the truck, and then Telstra pulled the license.
I need my fix of current Tech Talk Radio.
There's some suggestions they're all going to have SD card slots in them.
There's a new way of watching television that we're seeing emerge.
I can't give you that information over the phone.
Well, if you don't like it, then don't display the sidebar.
When I had a merchant account with the Communist Bank, the material that was the what?
You're listening to Australia's most informative technology show, Tech Talk Radio.
Listening to Tech Talk Radio.
In this house, we obey the laws of thermodynamics!
Tech Talk Radio's Gadget of the Week.
The Pure Sensia, S-E-N-S-I-A, from Pure, is touted as the first internet-connected radio with a touch screen.
What do you mean you get radio on your... No, go on, sorry.
The Sensia is an integrated DAB Plus digital and FM radio receiver and internet media streamer, which incorporates an easy-to-use intuitive colour touchscreen.
And now last year's gadget said we didn't need DAB because we had internet radio. Now we've got both.
Now we've got both in the same unit, Graham. Its high-resolution display can show slideshows broadcast by stations. It can show album art, even applications like weather, stock results, or social networking systems like Facebook or Twitter. Using the touchscreen, you can view and interact like never before, scrolling and spinning lists, tapping to select, sliding controls, and swiping to change views, says the Sensia propaganda. Sensia also features Pure Clear Sound, a trademark technology for impressive stereo sound, a handy remote control, an input for your iPod or MP3 player. There's also an alarm, countdown, sleep timers, and a headphone socket.
And it looks like something out of the Jetsons.
It does. It looks really good, doesn't it? The RRP is $749 Australian. For more info, go to...
My birthday next week.
Pure.
Go on, Chipper.
.com/AU. That's the gadget.
Here it is, everybody. The world's greatest website.
Tech Talk Radio website of the week.
Graham's poise, ready to type in a URL, earthtv.com. Have you ever watched the late night television on SBS? Andrew, or Justin, or Graham?
Flicks around the world and shows you city squares.
I watched it for about 45 minutes one night with somebody when we'd had a couple of drinkies.
That's right, we did. I mean, you did. Until we realised it was looped.
And we're trying to work out whether or not it was looped. Yeah, was that with you? Yeah,
it was. Okay. It is looped on SBS, but if you go to earthtv.com, there are dozens, if not hundreds, of cities or destinations, as they're referred to on the website, being surveilled by Earth TV webcams.
Hang on. What? They're being surveilled. What does that mean?
I mean, well, you can see what's happening there.
You can see what's happening. You can look through the webcams on Earth TV. You can see...
Oh, so you can see if it's snowing in Moscow.
You can. Almost certainly they've got webcams in Moscow. You can view these live on the website. You can also see local time, temperature, humidity, wind speed on many of the cameras. They overlay all that information on the screen. The cameras that I've looked at have been a couple of hours behind real time, so I think it gathers the images that it's looking at and then it buffers it over a couple of hours. But almost every city that you can think of on Earth, it's got them on Earth TV. So that's our website of the week, Andrew. And for people
still
who watch,
I'm getting my head around this. So you can go to Earth TV and check a webcam from most city centres around the world. Okay.
EarthTV.com. Good. You want to see?
I can't find one in Moscow. I'm sorry.
Oh, Moscow's got to be there, doesn't it? Graham's actually
gone to there, isn't it?
No, a bit further west.
But at the top,
this makes
no,
good.
That's Canada. Go west.
This
west,
is radio,
west.
Boys, not
that's
TV.
Hey, this is west.
It is. Graham's gone to Earth TV and found a Google map, which you can click and drag around. It's got pins in it to show you where the webcams actually are.
Fantastic.
That's our website of the week, Andrew.
What's the URL?
EarthTV.com.
There is a fine line between genius and madness.
Missed it by that much.
I know nothing. Nothing.
Don't ask!
Houston, we have a problem.
The Odd Spot on Tech Talk Radio.
A French software engineer said in January he was claiming a world record for calculating pi, the constant that has fascinated mathematicians for millennia.
Pi? I get that from the bakery.
What's the point?
Fabrice, I don't know.
Well, it's got a decimal point.
Fabrice Ballard said he used an inexpensive desktop computer and not a supercomputer used in past records to calculate pi to nearly 2.7 trillion decimal places.
Why? Because you had too much spare time.
He also
goes to that other website of the week when he's got nothing else to do, right?
Yeah. The gentleman took 29 hours to crunch pi to 2.5 billion digits previously with a supercomputer, but Mr. Ballard took 131 days, comprising 103 for the computation in binary digits, 13 days for verification, 12 days to convert the binary digits to a base of 10, and 3 final days to check the conversion.
And a month to print it on his laser.
I think so. The gear cost...
How many pages? Oh, no, don't. Graham will work that out. Don't.
The silly thing is, it's still not accurate. No matter how many decimal points they calculate it to, it still won't be accurate. There's still more
there's still decimal places that it won't get because you can never do it.
Next week he's going to tackle prime numbers.
It's just 22 on 7, isn't it?
Yeah.
Sorry? Yeah. No.
You've been listening to Tech Talk Radio.
It's starting
to get violent in the studios. Join us again next week when we'll do it all again. Who knows going to join us on Skype this next week. But this week we've had Jason has been in, otherwise known as Warlock, if you're on the chat. Warlock, has it been fun? Was it worth it?
Yeah, it was great, guys. Really enjoyed it.
That's good. Thanks for coming in and having a chat with us. We'll catch up with you again next, probably not next week, the week after, I think you're saying. We might even have Adam come in next week because he's worked out how to do it now too. So it's going to be fun. Thank you, everyone. Thank you, D-Link, for sponsoring us. It's been fantastic. Hope everyone got something out of the show tonight. I think I learned something. Not quite sure what, but I'll work it out on the way home.
I've got a couple of things off my chest. I'm happy with that.
It's been a bit like that. Yeah, don't forget to come to Rand. Yes. Don't forget to come to the website and tell us, what are we after? The tech gadgety pranky things.
Tech,
they're really
pranky
good.
Things.
Keep them coming through, guys. That's really good. So, yeah, until same time next week, bye for now. And you have been listening to Tech Talk Radio.
You've been listening to Tech Talk Radio, brought to you each and every week by a group of dedicated professionals from within the media, broadcasting, IT and telecommunications industries. The team consists of executive producer Andrew McComb, producer Dr. Ron, panellists Justin Dunlop, Graham Callaghan and Mark Diggins, expert opinion from Adam Turner, and our US correspondent is Lydia Davis. Post-production facilities courtesy of Evolving Communications, podcast production by Graham Callaghan. Tech Talk Radio is broadcast, recorded and streamed live to the world each and every Monday night at 8 p.m. from the studios of 3WBC. The crew wish to thank all the stations around Australia that take the show. Tech Talk Radio is available for syndication on your local station. For sponsorship and advertising, call 03 9818 2756 or visit our website techtalkradio.com.au for more information. This has been a production of Tech Talk Radio Vic and is subject to copyright and applicable laws and may not be rebroadcast without approval.